Our next presentation, Adam Whalen, Factors Influencing Honeybee Abundance Across Agricultural Landscapes in the Mid-South.
Thank you for that introduction. Like you said, my name is Adam Whalen. I'm a first-year PhD student at Mississippi State University studying under Dr. Angus Ketchot and Dr. Jeff Gore. And today I'm going to be speaking to you about some research I conducted during my master's degree dealing with honeybees and agricultural landscapes in the Mid-South. So first I'd like to mention talk about the reported declining pollinator health. So it's been reported that declining populations of managed and native pollinators have been noticed worldwide. There are several proposed causal mechanisms that include habitat loss, viral pathogens, parasitic mites, and pesticides. And these pesticides are being suspected because of many agrochemical compounds that have been detected in both honeybee wax and pollen of bees managed near agricultural environments. So the biggest concern with these honeybees is sublethal effects. The thought is that sublethal doses of the chemicals could cause behavioral changes in the bees that could affect hive health. There's several potential exposure routes, and some of these include contaminated talc and graphite dust that's blowing out of the planter vacuum exhaust that's come in contact with neonicotinoid coated seeds, pollen and nectar from crops treated with neonicotinoid seed treatments, and then just direct contact with foliar pesticides. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with a lot of what's going on with Europe with the banning of neonicotinoids. And also with the foliar applications of pesticides, there's been a lot of talk about requiring night spraying as an option to reduce exposure to foraging honeybees. So this is a list of highly toxic insecticides that was put together by Virginia Tech. And as you can see, there's a lot of commonly used pesticides that we use in the Mid-South and has a lot of organophosphates and neonics and just very chemicals that are used very often. And all these chemicals on the label, it specifically says that these products cannot be used when honeybees are in the treatment area or in blooming vegetation near the treatment area. So we want to make sure we follow these labels correctly because the label is the law. So with my master's research, we had three main areas we wanted to look into. The first was neonicotinoid contaminated talc and graphite from planter vacuum exhaust. The second was neonicotinoid uptake into crops from seed treatments. And the third was honeybee foraging activity in the agronomic crops of the Mid-South. Now, I won't be speaking about the first objective today, but I will say that we ran an experiment with by planting corn, and we were able to detect neonicotinoids in talc and graphite dust that had drifted at least 100 meters away from the treatment area. So the first objective I'm going to talk to you about was to examine the uptake of three systemic neonicotinoid insecticides in three plant systems across the Mid-South in three states. So this project was inspired by previous work done by my major professors and their colleagues. The paper was potential exposure of pollinators to neonicotinoid insecticide seed treatments in mid-southern United States, and basically that paper was showed where there was a detection in corn pollen, and it varied from a mean of 0 parts per billion to 5.9, depending on the seed treatment end rate. And also, there were no detections of neonics in nectar or cotton, and the average detection in pollen was less than 1 part per billion, and there was no detection in soybean flowers. So we wanted to look at these chemicals and how they were moving from the seed treatment up until these crops went reproductive. So we planted corn, soybean, and cotton in the three states, and we treated them with various seed treatments that consisted of either clothianidin, thymethoxam, or imidacloprid. We sampled these crops periodically throughout vegetative growth stages up until the first reproductive stage. And we sampled them by taking the newest plant growth, which was usually the fully most expanded leaf. We also took a soil sample at the first and last sampling dates. So we took these samples and we sent them off to the National Science Laboratory in Gastonia, North Carolina, to determine if any neonicotinoids had been absorbed into that new plant tissue from the seed treatment. and we were able to show the decline in the neonicotinoid compounds in the plant tissue as the plant grew and became reproductive. So with corn treated with Poncho 250, we're able to see a 99.3% reduction in neonicotinoid concentration by reproductive development. With Poncho 500, there was a 99.3% reduction. And with Poncho 1250, there was a 97.8% reduction, leaving about a mean of 71 parts per billion at that first reproductive stage, which was tasseling. With cotton leaf tissue, a 99.6% reduction. So at bloom, this was with Aris. So at bloom, there was only a mean of 1.32 parts per billion of imidacloprid found in the plant tissue as the plant went reproductive. With Evicta Duo, we saw a 99.9% reduction in the neonicotinoid concentration. And I've included both thymethoxam and clothianidin in this graph because clothianidin is the major metabolite of thymethoxam. And at bloom, we saw 2.10 parts per billion of thymethoxam in the plant tissue. In soybeans treated with Cruiser Max, there was a 99.9% reduction. So these chemicals, they're wearing down by the time these plants are entering reproductive growth. With soybeans treated with Poncho, there was a 100% reduction. There was no neonicotinoids found by the time the plants hit R1 and started producing flowers and became attractive to pollinators. So the summary of this would be that there was considerable reduction in neonicotinoid concentrations by reproductive growth. We did find some neonicotinoids in untreated plots, and this was most likely contamination during the treating, counting, and planting process. And also we found neonicotinoids in the soil, but most likely these aren't bioavailable for uptake, so they're not really factoring into the equation. So real quick, I want to talk about another study we did where we wanted to determine when and at what densities honeybees visit agronomic crops in the Mid-South. So in this study, we wanted to sample fields of cotton, corn, and soybean and look for foraging honeybees at three time intervals. The three time intervals we established were morning, midday, and evening, and morning consisted of 3 hours immediately after sunrise. Midday was defined as strictly as 10:30 to 1:30, and evening was 3 hours immediately before sunset. We sampled 82 total fields across Arkansas, Mississippi, and Tennessee, and these were split between 28 corn fields, 36 cotton fields, and 18 soybean fields. And we took a lot of weather parameters and plant growth stages at each field, and we also went back and looked at a map and to see if there's any recorded apiaries near these fields. Our sampling consisted of three observers slowly walking 50 meters of row and counting the number of honeybees on a hand counter. Each field was sampled at distances of 0, 20, 50, and 100 meters from the field edge, and we used an unchecked row between each observer to serve as a buffer. And these observers walked a slow walk just and made sure not to disturb the honeybees from their foraging activity to move them into the field. We recorded our data as bees per hectare. We were able to take the bee count and the plant, the row width, and turn it into bees per hectare. So looking at the different distances into the field, we weren't able to find any differences between distance within the field. This table strictly shows just our percent detection of each crop at each time interval. As you can see, there wasn't many major percent detections. A soybean in the middle of the day, 23% of the time that we were in a soybean field in the middle of the day, there was a positive detection, and that was our highest by far. So there is a significant differences of bees per hectare by each crop by time interval, with soybeans in the midday having significantly the highest number of honeybees observed foraging. And now I want to break down each crop by time interval and just talk about the numerical averages that we saw in corn. There were no detections in the morning or evening, and we had a mean of about almost 4 bees per hectare in the middle of the day. Corn, it produces pollen. The corn plant produces pollen for about a week, and corn pollen is said to not be very attractive to honeybees. They will forage it if there's no other pollen sources in the area, but it's not a main pollen source that they are attracted to. For cotton, we did see numerically the most in the middle of the day. Cotton pollen is not attractive to honeybees. Its pollen grain doesn't fit well into the pollen sac on the honeybee, but they do like the nectar, and this nectar becomes more available towards the middle of the day. And so the honeybees have been observed foraging the nectar and not the pollen, and if coming in contact with the pollen, wiping it from their bodies before entering the hive. And then soybeans. Soybeans was by far, in the middle of the day, our largest observations, with 122.14 honeybees observed per hectare. And a honeybee, it's said that soybean nectar is of high quality to honeybees and that they really like to forage it. And that's why you see a lot of commercial beekeepers wanting to keep their bees near soybean fields. So just to summarize the foraging study, distance was not significant. Most foraging honeybees were observed in soybeans during the middle of the day. So this draws the conclusion that night spraying might not be as effective as afternoon spraying as a way to limit contact with foraging honeybees in soybean fields. And this comes to the thought that there will be more residual time if we were to spray in the afternoon compared to spraying at night for that chemical activity to wear off by the time the bees start entering the field in larger numbers. But I'd like to draw some overall conclusions. We saw a considerable reduction in neonicotinoid concentrations by reproductive growth. The corn treated with the highest rates of poncho were the only treatments to have higher concentrations of neonicotinoids still present in the plant tissue. And these never went in excess of 71 parts per billion, and that was in Poncho 1250, which isn't commonly used in the Mid-South. We also saw a few observations of honeybees foraging in corn in the Mid-South throughout all time intervals. So that shows that, well, we think that neonicotinoids in corn in the Mid-South may not pose a threat when it comes from the seed treatment into the pollen. Cotton and soybean tissue sampled at the first reproductive growth stage contain little to no neonicotinoid compounds. So an overall conclusion would be that foraging honeybees in the Mid-South are not exposed to high concentrations of neonicotinoids from the seed treatments through crop pollen or nectar. Risk of pesticide exposure through foliar applications can be reduced through evening spraying. And as always, communication with neighboring beekeepers is always key. A lot of these beekeepers that are benefiting from the crops would gladly move their bees knowing that a producer was going to spray anytime soon, and we just want to keep that line of communication open. I'd like to thank my advisors, Dr. Angus Ketchum and Dr. Jeff Gore, as well as Dr. Scott Stewart and his group at Tennessee and Dr. Gus Lorenz and his group at Arkansas. I'd also like to thank Don Cook, Fred Musser, my fellow graduate students, and everyone who helped with these projects. With that, I'll take any questions. Yes.
Did you observe
The question was, did we observe all the bees in the flowers or any extra floral nectaries? No, it was strictly looking at the flowers and the floral nectary under the flower. But in the literature, it does say that bees will go to the extra floral nectaries, but they prefer the nectaries found at the base of the flower and that they will move to that. So that would be something good to look at. It would be looking at how bees use those extra floral nectaries, since we did see some neonicotinoids at higher levels in earlier growth stages would be something to look at.
Were any of your cotton samples in particular done prior to flowering, or was it all during flowering?
For the uptake study or the
observations?
The observations. We did have some that were conducted before flowering, but for this analysis in this presentation, it's strictly the reproductive stages.
Let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.